Thank you for joining me today. If you like the podcast, please like and share this with other women in your life. You can find out more about Sweatknit on sweatknit.com or follow them on Instagram at Sweatknit and Sweatknit Charlotte. You can follow me personally on Instagram at itsealsmart. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Sweatknit Be Amazing podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Be Amazing podcast. I'm your host, Seal, and I'm excited that you have joined me again today here on Sweatknit, which is where the Be Amazing podcast is hosted. And make sure you go and check them out. They've got all kinds of events and classes. It doesn't matter if you're a gym or if you're an individual. They highlight gyms in our area, and there's more than just one Sweatknit. They're all over the country. So make sure you go to sweatknit.com to check it out. But before we get into my guest today, I want to talk about the two events that are coming, and I want you to be a part of it. Strong Camp is coming to Charlotte. This is put on by Strong Fitness Magazine. It is May 22nd and 23rd. It is all women, ladies. Grab your gal pals and let's go. We're going to be working out. We're going to have seminars. We're just going to have fun being together, finally. So you don't want to miss it. You can go to strongcamp.com to register now, or you can even go to my Instagram page, which is at itsealsmart, and make sure you click on the link in my bio. It'll take you straight to registration. So don't miss that. And plus, we've got like incredible instructors, which I know you guys have been seeing, but just I can't wait till we're all together. So it's so amazing. Then October 15th and 16th is the Be Amazing Weekend, which is really the reason why this podcast exists. It's all about sharing women's stories. It's all about celebrating each other. It's about coming together. It's not just celebrating your achievements or setting a goal to run a 5K or take the stage in bikini or rock the runway and share your story or celebrate at the gala. It's just coming together. It's just this one big celebration. Paul Busetta is going to be there. He's our chief photographer for the weekend. He's covering everything. Strong Fitness Magazine is our title sponsor. Our other sponsors include our official tanning sponsor, which is Glow Body, and Burn Bootcamp, y'all, has come on board as a sponsor. So we are so excited. On top of that, Sweatknit is going to be sharing everything. We've got so much ahead. So I just invite you to join us. And you can go and register at beamazingweekend.com to register now. So I can't wait. Hopefully you'll join us for one or come for both. Like it's both weekends are all about women. So, and all about fitness and health. So I just invite you to join us. So let's get into my guest today. Her name is Lori Honeycutt. And if you have ever felt stuck in a relationship that's toxic, or if you have lost hope, then this podcast is for you. Lori is going to share her story of how she had a dream of getting married and that it turned into a nightmare that she lived in for years. She opens up about the turmoil that she felt inside, but she was able to find hope in the midst of the pain. Listen to hear how her faith in God and strong support system gave her the courage to leave. Lori is no longer just surviving, she is thriving. She is now married and has a stepdaughter. And you can also find Lori every day in her closet on social media sharing her passion for fashion. This passion has also given her an opportunity to work with Trades of Hope and their mission to help women. So get ready for this incredible conversation with Lori.
Welcome to the show, Lori. I'm so glad to have you on today.
Thank you so much for having me. I am excited to be here.
Well, I really am so glad that you could jump on with me and talk about some things in your life that I feel like there are probably a lot of women out there that either are in that situation or have struggled with an abusive relationship. And I think that what you have to say today will be very encouraging to someone. And so before we get into all that, I first want you to tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay. I am a Charlotte native. I grew up in Charlotte and it was such a great childhood and all the good things. And then I went to college and I had a great 4 years at App State and I loved it and graduated and moved to Charlotte. And I was a bit sheltered growing up just because I did go to private Christian school through all 12 years of school. And so, you know, I got back to Charlotte and really had to kind of come into my own and learn some things. And so when you are a bit naive, you don't always make the best relationship choices. And so, I dated a lot and ultimately just as a young woman with the struggles that a lot of young women face, you don't recognize your value and you don't recognize the worth that you have. There were different relationships and some were good and some were not so great. And then because I grew up in the South and because you're supposed to be married by the time you're 30 and have kids and all that, you know, by the time I was 30, I wasn't yet married. And I thought that I was accepting that. And I thought that I was okay with that. But in looking back, I can just understand that I really wasn't, because I was 31 when I did get married, and it went very, very quickly, married for the first time, because, you know, what I love is how God can absolutely redeem a story. And so, you know, the first time I was 31, it went very, very quickly. We met each other in February of 2011. We got married in June of 2011. I got home from my honeymoon and I Googled annulment and how to make that happen. And then I spent a couple years really doing everything I could to make that work. And then ultimately had to make the decision to leave. And so fast forwarding to today, I am married. I have a beautiful daughter. She was 7 when we got married. She is now 10. So that's kind of that's a broad picture overview, but I know that there's more into it that we'll get into.
Yeah. Well, and this is what's so interesting. So first, let's just back up a second. Charlotte native. Hello. Me too.
Yeah. Which is funny because we always, it's like, oh, you know, so-and-so. Oh yeah.
It is funny because I think a lot of people in Charlotte who are natives, like, we feel like we are kind of a rare, you know, thing, because there's so many people that have come here from other places. But when I find somebody that is from Charlotte, I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, Charlottean, let's go. Like, I love that.
And then when we went to really small high schools, what's even crazier is when somebody's like, oh, I went to this really small little high school that's not even around anymore. And I'm like, oh, I know that one.
Yes, Christian school. I went to Crown Christian. It doesn't even exist anymore. It's yeah. not here.
Right.
For those of you listening, Crown Christian was originally the Christian school on the grounds of Heritage USA, which yep. was in Fort Mill. And people don't even know what Heritage USA is or what PTL was, but it was all part of that. Yep. I went to Crown Christian that eventually the school moved off grounds, and then now it doesn't even exist anymore. But yeah, it's funny when you say small Christian school, I'm like, where, which one were you? So let's kind of take it back a little bit and talk a little bit more detail in your experience, because I think that there will be people that can relate to it. So you said that it moved pretty quick when you met your husband, and that ex-husband. Let me back that up.
Ex-husband.
And you moved pretty fast with it. You went to look up how to annul immediately after the honeymoon. When did that light go off for you? Like, was it during the honeymoon that you were like, oh my gosh, I made a mistake. Like, what is this? Or was there anything leading up to that that made you question, even the day that you walked down the aisle? Like, what kind of went on?
Well, in looking back, and you choose to see what you want to see. And when you've decided that, or for me, when I decided that I want something, I'm pretty much full force ahead. And at that point in time, it was very much a time when if I wanted something, I just made it happen. And I would jump feet first and think everything will just figure itself out later. Like, I don't worry about details until I'm in it, and then I got to figure it out. And that, for better or for worse, is still, I'm better now than I used to be. That's counseling. But, you know, that has always been a part of my personality. And so we met each other, it was actually February 16th of 2011. And in looking back, there was a huge flag right from the beginning when I was honest. It was like, yeah, I have a date. We had a date like on a Wednesday night. I had another date the next night. And because I was online dating, I had 2 jobs. That's how you met people. And so there was always dates. And he wigged out about the fact that I had another date. And in looking back now, I'm like, oh, that was a flag. But at the time, to me, it was just super flattering. Oh, here's this guy, and he's really into me after one date. And so it just didn't click with me that was something I should have
maybe paid attention to. And then very quickly met, he had a very young daughter. She was two. Introduced me to her very, very quickly. And then I met his family. And so it was interesting because he knew exactly what he was doing. He was very, very charming. He was, at the time I thought he was good looking, but once you get to know somebody and their personality, looking at him now, I don't see anything attractive at all. That was February that was February 16th. I think he proposed like March 16th. Like it was so fast. And then we were planning the wedding for June and we did go to premarital counseling, but it was really, really basic. And I just wanted to be married. He didn't like my parents and I didn't understand that dynamic at the time because it's a flag when somebody's not making an effort with your parents, but I was making excuses in my head. And so leading up to the wedding, he didn't really make an effort to get to know any of my friends. On the day of the wedding, unbeknownst to me, he cussed my mom out in the church and he professed to be a Christian. So Christian would be Christ-like, and they just weren't Christ-like behaviors that were being displayed that day. And I didn't know it. I was so in my own little bubble. I was so excited. I had the beautiful dress. I had my friends with me getting ready. And it was just a day that I was so excited about. Another flag, the only people attending the wedding on his side were his parents, his sister and two nieces, his grandmother. And my stepdaughter's mom actually did come to the wedding. In conversations later, she said, you know, I really wanted to tell you to run away, but she couldn't because she knew I wouldn't hear it. She knew I was under his spell. She was very aware of his manipulation and his way of doing things. And so I was actually the third wife. He had been married. He had been married again. In between being married the first and second time, he had actually had this daughter who was two when we got married. He had been married after she was born, and then that had ended very quickly. Another flag, he didn't tell me about the second wife. He had not brought that up until he had to show the divorce certificate when we were going for our marriage license. So I was just at that point, I was like, I have to get married. It's kind of like in Sex and the City when Charlotte is so insistent on getting married. I could so relate to that because for me, it was like, I have to do this. I have to check this off. And therefore I'm going to ignore and not, it'll all work out. It'll all work out. And I'm an eternal optimist too. So I'm always like, oh, it'll work out. Mm-hmm. And so the day of the wedding, we get married. We were going to have a very short honeymoon. Like, I think we were going away two nights, maybe. And unbeknownst to me, when we left, he had a whole flask of whiskey or like some kind of liquor that he'd had. So I have no idea what his intoxication level was when we left the church. It didn't register with me. We drove to the mountains and had a honeymoon that was the first night I knew I'd made an enormous mistake. Like he got really upset with me over not shutting a door. I didn't think about it and didn't shut the door and he just went off on me. And then there was another conversation that we had. My mom really wanted us to come back to the house and open up our wedding gifts because she wanted to see what everybody had given and she wanted to be a part of it. And that was even worse. Like, it was awful. That I think happened the second night. So, you know, both nights he had just completely, I always called it the spiral because it would be something really, really small that would start him off. And then he would just go on and on and on. And it's a scary place to be because you're like, okay, what do I say? What do I do to get this to stop? Like, I'm not a person who ever fights. That's not something I don't like that kind of an environment. And he thrived on debate and fighting and things like that. And that's never been me. And so I would just back, 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 back. And then I would take it as, oh, I've done something wrong. hadn't done anything wrong. It's just when you're dealing with somebody like that, they will make it your fault. They will turn everything on you. They will tell you that it's all your fault, that I'm drinking because you're doing this. I'm doing this because you're doing that. Like, they never take ownership. And so we got home and I had to go and pick up my dog from my parents' house, and he's carrying the presents out, and my mom is so upset, and I am caught in between the two of them. I was so miserable because my mom's feelings are hurt. Here, you know, we've just had this wedding and he's just can't get out of there fast enough, and she's aware of what kind of person he is, and I'm moving in with this person. And so that was June of 2011, and the Father's Day weekend, we had another instance where Jack is my dog, and he was getting used to being in this new environment and had been put up in the kitchen, maybe, I don't remember. And he had these, it sounds so dumb, but they were decorative beads that he had put from the kitchen into the living room because the house where we lived was really small. And Jack had gotten really freaked out and he had messed these beads up. And that night I was terrified. Like, my first time that I went into counseling, we actually talked about this night. So it was from the very, very get-go that I knew I was in a not great situation. And as I thought about it, I was like, okay, I can run away and I can find myself back in this situation again, or I can stay, I can work on it, I can do everything I know to do, and then I will just believe that it'll work out. Because in addition to Googling annulment, I was Googling like how to be a better wife, how to do this, how do I need to pray? Like, those were also the things, because for me, it was like, okay, I've just finally gotten married. I had always wanted to be married. I'm married. So let me figure out how to make this work. And that is, you know, where I found myself that summer of 2011.
All of this that you're talking about, I feel like you almost have to be an investigator in relationships, especially with people now online. And you have to look past the photo and look past what's written, and you have to really dive in. And I feel like you really hit on some points basically saying that, because you didn't know that you thought what you saw is what you got, because right. That's who you are.
And exactly, that's who I was. And it didn't occur to me that, oh, what I'm being told and what I'm being presented with isn't actually who this person is. And that my ex-husband is excellent at putting on a front, but you can't keep that front up forever. And he had substance abuse issues. And so while the sober version was fine, the issues would really ramp up when he would be using substance, which alcohol was the substance of choice, but he also had some other, he liked pot. And for some people, when you cross those things, it's a absolute monster who comes out. And so in November of 11, I was looking at different things, just trying to find help somehow. Well, I came across, it's called Al-Anon, and it is for family and friends who have been affected by somebody else's addiction. And I remember looking online, and I remember walking into my very first Al-Anon meeting, and they were so wonderful. It was a Tuesday night, 8 o'clock meeting, and they were so incredible. And I just sat there and I just listened, and I found hope in what was being shared. It's like, you can live with somebody who has this, and you can learn to function. And so I began to attend those meetings, and they helped me learn how to make sure that I got myself to a safe place. So a lot of times when that spiral would start, I would grab my keys, I would grab my Jack, my dog, and I would get out of the house. And sometimes he would get my keys before I could. Sometimes he would get my phone. So there were nights, if he could get my phone, it would mean that I wasn't able to call somebody, because I was very fortunate that I had friends who I could call and they would let me come stay, or otherwise I would just drive until I felt like the situation was calmer, and then I would go back to the house. And that was 11. In 12, I left. In March of 12, I left for a couple weeks, and he, one, wouldn't let me get my things out of the house. Like, I went back to get some things, and he was trying to convince me that he would do better, and he would be better, and it would get better. And so ultimately he convinced me to come back, and I had to tell my mom this on her birthday. I had been with my parents, and I'm like, no, I'm going back. I'm going to try and make it work. And that was one of the hardest conversations. Like, that was awful. And then I wrote during this time. Like, I would be writing things that were happening, and I would be writing things down. And so I started to really see a clear pattern. When you're dealing with these kind of things and these kind of cycles, you see where something will happen, and then they'll promise to do better, and they'll do everything they can, and you'll get flowers, and you'll get jewelry, and you'll get these things. Like, that's real. And then they do it again. And then you're back to that start again. And it's like, okay. And so in this time period, I'm starting to see this very, very clear pattern. In 2013, we were good up until like June of 13. And he had a house cleaning business, and things started to really shift in that business. It was not going as well. And so it just, oh wow, that was almost as bad as the start. And at this point I had Al-Anon, and at this point I was like, okay, I'm going to go to therapy, because I really need to understand how to live. This is hard. And to me though, it was, hey, this is a hard marriage. And everybody always says that marriage is hard. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm just in an exceptionally hard marriage. I go into counseling, and the counselor, as I'm sharing what's going on, I said, I'm really trying to make this marriage work, and I really want to do everything that I can. And she asked me to take an online quiz. And she said, and when you take this quiz, please take it at work and somewhere where your husband will not have access to your computer. And so I go back to work, because it was actually a lunchtime appointment. And I go back to work, and I go online, and the quiz was, it was about domestic violence. It was about how dangerous is the situation that you're in. That was the moment. Because I'd had somebody, I have a friend who had said, your situation is domestic violence. And I didn't want to listen to her. I didn't want to hear her. And I was doing everything I could to make this marriage work. Don't tell me that I'm in an abusive situation. And so I take this quiz. And because at this point I had been in Al-Anon for almost 2 years, the way that I answered the questions, I was like, well, in Al-Anon, I've learned this. In Al-Anon, I've learned that. And so I think that the reason that there was never physical violence, there was plenty of other abuse, but not physical violence, was because I would get myself out. And I was able to, you know, if you have kids, if you have like, that's not always possible. And like you said, there were nights, like, he would not let me leave. He would take my keys. He would standing behind the car so that I couldn't, like, there was no way for me to leave unless I ran him over, and I wasn't going to go to jail for him. He wasn't worth it. So I started working with a counselor, and that was summer of 2013. Went on a trip. This was something, even though it always caused issues, because he hated for me to go on trips. He hated for me to do things with my friends, but I always pushed because I really needed that. And so I had gone on a trip to see my godparents with my parents, and this was in September of 13, I think. I don't remember exactly, but what it, long and short of it is, I got home from this trip. I did not see him sober for several weeks, because I would leave before he would wake up. I would get home after he was already home, and he would already be drinking. And so it was this series of weeks of just, it was awful. And it was during that time period that we had my stepdaughter. And usually these instances would happen when she wasn't there. So this one happened, and it was a weekend, and she was there, and he spiraled, and I couldn't leave, and she heard it all. And so I had to tell her mom after, when I was taking her home, I'm like, she heard him spiral on me. And I, if she has nightmares, if anything comes up, you need to know that she was there. And I tried to stay calm for her. I tried to diffuse the situation as much as I could. But still, you're in a home and you're hearing this, and that's scary. And especially, she was about to be 5. So, I mean, she would be cognizant of what was happening. And I remember I was also planning her 5th birthday party with her mom. And my ex's mom had also contributed. And so I was putting this whole big princess 5th birthday party together. And it was a time when I just was like, okay, nothing's changing if nothing is changing. And so I have to determine how I'm going to move forward. I got the flu that year for Christmas. I was so sick. And when you're living with somebody who was like he was, it's always about them. And so if somebody's in the house is sick, it doesn't go so well. But ultimately, I was able to go to my parents' house for New Year's Day. And the night before, he had just done his usual thing. And so he was in no shape or form to go to my parents' house. And so I remember standing there with my mom on New Year's Day. We just cleaned everything up. And I was like, Mom, I'm really praying about leaving. Growing up, divorce was never an option. And yet her reaction was, she was doing everything she could not to jump up and down. I mean, she was so happy. I knew that if I was going to leave, that it was going to have to be where I planned it out very carefully.
I think what's important to acknowledge here, and something that you just said that is something that needs to be said and heard, is that there's a level of shame that comes with being in a marriage, and you've been raised in a Christian home, or you've been raised in a home that says divorce is wrong. And that's something that's been your viewpoint the whole time. And then you're in this situation. Did you feel that level of shame? Did you feel that level of like, I got to stay in it no matter what, like I got to stick this out. Like, I feel like that's kind of where you were in some of your thinking and processing.
Every bit. Like the fact that I came back researching annulment was because I didn't believe in divorce. And so, you know, it was like, okay, well, if I can get it annulled, and then I was like, but I just got married and this is what I've always wanted. And so I believed that I loved him, and I probably at that point did. So there was that. And I had always been one who was like, love conquers all, regardless. Like, you can love somebody enough. No, you cannot love somebody out of their addiction. And that was something that I really, really had to learn. And yeah, like the shame factor, and that will come up later in how he tried to shame me back. You can grow up and hear that divorce is never an option. But if you find yourself in a toxic situation where you're praying that you die, then that's never okay. You're praying, take one of us, I don't care. That's not good.
You know? But that's real. Like, what you're saying is real. Those are real thoughts, and people really go through that. And the fact that all of a sudden you're standing in the kitchen with your mom and she's like, hey, God, yes, you need to leave. Like, you're like, but wait a second. So at that moment, did you feel like, oh my gosh, should I have said something sooner to my mom? Or like, what if I had opened up and talked to her about it? Would I have moved faster to take steps out? Like, did that ever cross your mind after she had said that?
No. And so I had left back in March of 12, and I knew she had been really upset when I went back at that point. And for me at that point, it was like, it hadn't even been a year. And I really, at that point, wanted to believe that love could conquer all, and that we loved each other enough that it would be okay. And something that you do, or something that I did, I was careful in the information that I shared, which I think is important regardless. Like, when you're married, you certainly do need to be careful the information that you share with your girlfriends, because if you're always painting your husband as the bad guy, then they're going to be like, oh my gosh, he's such a jerk, versus you temper that and you're like, oh, he did this, or oh, he's driving me crazy. But like, there's a healthy version of that. But in this particular situation, I had to be so careful and so filtered, because I wanted him to be able to have a relationship with people. And so it wasn't so much that maybe I should have opened up sooner, because I knew that I had been taking the steps as far as counseling, as far as Al-Anon, as those things had been very, very helpful to me. And so ultimately, even at that point, when I said, I'm thinking of leaving, it would still be a couple more weeks before I ultimately made the decision of, okay, it's time. I'm free to leave.
Okay. So we're at that point where you're free to leave. What was it? What were the moments? What were the steps? Because that's a huge, first of all, that's a huge thing that you did, a huge thing. And it took a lot of bravery. It took a lot of love for yourself. And it even took love for him to take right. the steps. And so I just want to take that minute to say, like, what an amazing thing, because that's not an easy thing to do. And it's a lot of risk involved with that. What were those steps that you took and what in getting free?
As a Christian, I'm a big prayer. I always take things up in prayer. And so I actually prayed for some really specific things. One of those being that he would start going to AA meetings on his own accord, or at least attempt to stop drinking. And initially he said his New Year's resolution or something like that was going to be that he would stop drinking for a couple days or something. And then he was like, yeah, I changed my mind on that. And that was one. Two was, and I get all splashy when I'm talking about it, because like, this is, I didn't realize it, but it, I still get like, so, because it is so hard, because this is something that if you're in it, it is tremendously hard. And you feel, even though I had Al-Anon and I had counseling, it's still something that you're having to do on your own, and you're having to try and make all the next right steps. And so the second thing was, we had friends who were going to do a small group for marriages. And I reached out to the female friend and said, hey, is there room in y'all's group for two more people? I will never forget. I was sitting outside the office at work that day when she messaged me back, and she was like, oh, I'm really sorry. The group is full. Like, we wanted to cap it at this certain number of people. And that was when God was like, you are free to go. So I made the appointment with the lawyer, because something that I've learned since, I've done training for human trafficking to teach awareness classes. And something that I learned in one of those classes, it was a moment I'll never forget. They talked about the threat, the unspoken threats. And something that they talked about was putting a gun on a table in front of somebody. And that moment had actually happened to me. I don't remember the exact context, but I remember him pulling out that gun and putting it in front of me. And so I knew that he had also made threats if I tried to leave. And he might have thought he was joking, but in hindsight, you never tell somebody that you'll kill them if they leave. You don't ever say that to somebody. And if somebody said that to you, that is not okay, ever. And so I knew I had to, I knew I had, everything had to be done and in place. So for somebody who always jumps feet first and doesn't really like details, this was definitely something that I detailed out. Made the appointment with the lawyer. He'd always threatened to take, I had a condo that I had rented out, and he'd always threatened that he would take that from me. So I met with the lawyer to understand exactly what I needed to know. I explained the situation to her. We drafted up the separation agreement, which in North Carolina, you don't actually have to have, but I had done it because I was concerned about the things that I had. And I also really wanted to protect my family. So we've had that meeting. He had a cleaning business, and it used to be that his cleaning business's busiest day was a Wednesday. So initially I had put everything in place for Wednesday. And then in conversation, it came up, and I truly believe this was a God thing. In conversation, it came up that his busy day had switched to a Tuesday. So I was able to shift everything, I was able to get a storage unit in place. And so the Tuesday before, I left on February 4th of 2014. The Tuesday before I left, there was that huge ice storm that came through Charlotte. And I remember my car spinning out of control, but didn't T-bone the car that was right there. And I will always believe that was angels who kept my car from hitting that other car, because had my car, if had I been in an accident that day, I wouldn't have been able to leave the next week. The day that we moved, I got up like it was any other day, got dressed, left the house, drove to my parents' house, wrote a letter, said, I am done. I'm not angry. I'm not upset. I'm just done. Put the key in it. And that's what I put in the mailbox. My parents and family friends and my friend Nicole helped me. There was not a lot of my stuff in the house. He had always been very controlling about everything, like all the decoration, all the stuff that was in the house, very, very controlled. So it took only about 2.5 hours to get my stuff all packed up and out of there. As we were loading, as we had closed up the moving van, it's when it started to rain. And we got it to the storage unit, got it unpacked. The following Tuesday was the Tuesday that the snow started, because we had like snow on that Tuesday and then we had a couple feet of snow. And so, and it was just crazy. So like, it was no question in my mind. And I needed that confirmation too, because what he tried to do, he tried to go to the women's pastor at the church where we attended. And he was like, well, Lori's left me. And he was really trying to manipulate the pastoral staff at church to be like, you need to tell her to come home. Divorce is not acceptable. Never mind the fact that he was divorced twice. It was all about me and the fact that I was wrong and divorce is a sin. And there's a book. And if you've grown up in church, the book is called 10 Lies the Church Tells Women. And that book is critically important to understand things that might've been taught to you that might not be exactly true. So I definitely recommend that book.
We'll make sure we drop that. And what was the name of it again?
10 Lies the Church Tells Women. And so I did ultimately agree to counseling. And I'm very, very fortunate that the counselor who was on staff at the church at the time was very familiar with substance abusers. She was very familiar with the type of situation that I was coming out of. And she was incredibly supportive of me. And a lot of times in church, you don't find that. And I will always be thankful and always recognize that that was absolutely, God had put that in place. And so I did agree to the counseling, but before we started officially, he was supposed to attend 90 AA meetings in 90 days. And while he did complete that, we didn't continue because he continued to show that he was not changed. And he was continuing to have the same behaviors, even sober, as he had while we were together. And so ultimately, I ended the process. And I am so fortunate that I was able to continue. I found another Al-Anon meeting in Charlotte that I continued to attend for about a year after. And then life got kind of busy. But I also continued to do counseling. And so I really did a lot of work afterwards to work on my own healing and really understand maybe why I hadn't seen the flags and why, you know, being able to recognize the fact that, hey, it's not always great to jump 2 feet first and then figure everything out. I also realized coming out of that, that I had a responsibility to make a difference. I've always had empathy. I've always cared about things going on, but really in the time I spent learning more about myself, I was like, okay, so there's also a responsibility that comes with this to figure out how to make a difference. And I ended up in January of 15 reading a book about human trafficking here in the United States. And I knew human trafficking existed in other countries, but I really didn't know that it existed so much here domestically in our backyards. And so read that book, got involved. That was actually how I had that moment and understanding about the gun, because I was doing the trafficking awareness classes, have been able to teach a couple classes on human trafficking awareness, went to a night of human trafficking awareness and learned that the fastest growing, this was 2016, learned that the fastest growing form of pornography is toddler pornography, which broke me. Like, cried for days after that. Decided to become a foster parent because I knew that if they're pulled out of that situation, they're going to be in foster care. Went through the foster parenting classes in spring of 16. And then again, we can have plans and God's going to laugh. but those classes were the trauma-informed parenting classes, which was really important because In November of 2016, I met my now husband, and he was a widower, and his daughter was 6 at the time. And so we talked, and because of all of the work that I had done myself, I knew the flags. I also, you know, you talked about this a little bit earlier, but I certainly was running background checks on people. Like, I paid the $20 or whatever it was so that when I had a date, I actually would run their background. I would look to see what I could find. And so there were a couple guys that prior to meeting Michael, I wouldn't have had been talking to, and we might have made arrangements, and then I would pull their background and go, oh, I'm sorry, no. It's just not going to work out, because you do have to be so aware. And especially now with the way that things are online, don't send pictures. Anything that you send can be used, to be really aware of what you're sending. And so we talked a lot and got to know each other. And because we were older and because of the stories that we both have, we knew that we were who the other had been looking for. And so again, we did move quickly, but this time it looked really different. But try telling that to everybody in my life as I'm going, I'm engaged. And everybody's going, oh, but it's worked out really well. He and I got married in August of 2017. So we just celebrated 3 years, and there is no comparison. Like, I love my husband so much. He's the best thing to happen for me. I love our daughter. She's wonderful. So everything works out. I will to this day say I wouldn't change a thing, because I would not be who I am today if I hadn't been through that. And, you know, interestingly enough, because of that, and I now serve on a nonprofit working, it's Go Love Others Well is GLOW. And the primary focus right now, there's an orphan group in the Ukraine. And so the biggest thing here in the U.S. and also in other areas, when you have kids coming out of orphanages who don't have parents, or whose parents have relinquished because they couldn't afford them or for whatever reason, those kids become really prime targets for trafficking. And if not trafficking, then suicide. There's just a lot that can happen to them. And trafficking is not just sex trafficking. There's labor trafficking too. I ended up finding out, I attended a party in November, and then in January did a party of my own, and it's called Trades of Hope. And I loved the mission, but after I did my party, I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. And then I went on with life. And then in July, Janet reached out to me, the lady who I had hosted my party with. And she's like, have you ever thought about doing Trades of Hope? And I was like, no, I don't do direct sales. So then she's like, well, will you please think about it? Will you please pray about it? And I was like, okay. So, and I truly did pray about it. And God started to remind me of some different things. And I reached out to my friends who had purchased things from my party. And I said, well, what did you think? And they said, oh, we love it. We love the mission. And so then I started researching what was involved to be a partner, because, you know, anytime you do direct sales, there's going to be certain things that are required. And with Trades of Hope, it's one commissionable sale in a 12-month period. And I was like, oh, they really are about the mission of Trades of Hope and not about, you know. And the cool thing is, it's such a culmination, because we work with a group here in the U.S. who makes the Freedom Necklace and makes the Warsh Bars that are made by survivors of trafficking here. And then in Haiti, we work with, I think, a couple different groups who are parents who are providing for their children, and in India, providing education. And so artisans all over the world, and items that are just incredible. And so it's a culmination. I'm still involved in my other things local, but then I also get to have this. And because I love clothes and shoes and fashion, it's like the perfect mix of all of it. So
it really is. Like, I always tease you because you're always like Lori's closet. Because anytime, yeah. If you ever follow her on social media, which go ahead and tell them where to follow you.
So I have Lori Honeycutt Trades of Hope. And then I also, my personal account is Charbel4 on Instagram. And I cross share sometimes, but one, I'm really careful because I do understand about trafficking and all that. I don't share any pictures of my daughter on my Lori Holford, Lori Honeycutt Trades of Hope Instagram. So yeah, but I do a lot from my today. I'm at the lake house, so I'm not in my closet.
So it'll be a little bit different. The video is a bit different. Well, I love your journey and the fact of like, there's a couple things that really stick out. One is this didn't affect your relationship with God. It didn't change your viewpoint of him or your viewpoint of church even. Like, because I think sometimes people get mad and they're just, you know, they turn their back or they disconnect, I guess, you know, in that way of believing, like having faith and believing. So I'm really, you know, intrigued by that. Like what made you just really hold and cling to that?
One is just in growing up, that was always, I might have gone crazy in college and done my own thing, but I always believed that God loved me. And then, when I was in that summer, I was in such an awful, dark place that it was like, okay, God, I didn't have anywhere else. There was a memory that popped up for me today. And it was like, it was something about the wave that slammed me into the rock that, like, I don't remember exactly, but it's like, I knew that I had made that choice. And I knew that the only thing I could do was rely on God so that he would lead me. And I trusted that he was going to lead me and that it would, I honestly believed for the longest time that he was going to just make my ex-husband, he was going to do a transformation in my ex-husband. I truly, truly believed that for a long time. And then Al-Anon was key in helping me to understand to own my own choices. And in Al-Anon, we talk about a higher power. And so for me, God was my higher power. And I learned how to own my choices and what I owned my part in it. And then I believe that is what helped me also to, when it was time for me to go, to recognize, like, God made it really, really clear. I'm taking alcoholism out of your family because I'm removing you from that family. And that's exactly what he did.
That's awesome. Like that speaks volumes about you and your heart and the willingness, like you said, to own what is your part. And I think that's, I know there have been times for me where you don't want to own like your choice. You don't want to own it. Like, I don't want to own that. I want to blame somebody. But the fact that you owned it and then you said a key phrase, do the work. Like you did all the work in the middle of the storm, you did all the work and then you continue to do work on yourself outside of that, which is why you are where you are now and why you have this such perspective. And for those of you that don't know Lori personally, and I do, this woman glows, like she literally glows, like she beams, her smile beams. You would never know that she had the traumatic past that she has had and come out of. So that's just to me, like, that's such hope in itself. I mean, you're doing Trades for Hope and it's like, you're giving hope just by what you've experienced. So it's really, really awesome. And I know that it's not easy to go back and remember things or bring things up or talk about things. Cause like halfway through, you're like, oh, I'm getting, you know, starting to get like splotchy and stuff talking about it. But man, I appreciate the vulnerability and the fact that you're just sharing and like you're open with it, because this is real stuff. This is well, other people.
And I will always share, because if you're in that situation or if you have a friend and you're watching it play out, and honestly, I can only imagine how much harder it was for my friends who were watching it. So for somebody who's in it, I would definitely say, like, go to an Al-Anon meeting, find a counselor. You know, you're not stuck. I was really, really fortunate that my parents, I was able to move back in with my parents. Not everybody has that, but there are places to go and there are safe places and you can get out. And then for somebody who, you know, you're watching your friend go through it, don't give up on them. But also, you know, I think this is where it gets really hard, because you want to save them and you want to rescue them. And sometimes
it's really not your job, but they just need to know that you're there. And I am super thankful for my friendships because they might have wanted to tell me what to do so many times, but they didn't. And they simply were there. And they were scared. They were having conversations that I didn't know about, but they were super supportive of me. And so if you have a friend who's going through it, just do everything you can just to love them where they're at and to understand that it might take several tries before they're finally able to break free. Because the thing is, when you're with somebody like that, they're a master manipulator. They are so good at what they've honed this skill, and it can take time to get, like, I left and came back, and you know, it can take time. You don't just automatically get out of it. Like, it's certainly a process, and maybe it's not this time, but it could be the next time that your friend finally gets out of that situation.
Well, that's such awesome advice. Before we like wrap all this up, I'm going to totally switch gears.
Because yes.
One of the reasons I met you was fitness, right?
Yes.
And we both, we've run together. We've met up and run together. We did one recently. What is your favorite song? Like, is there like a song that you have to listen to before you go to the race? Or is there one you have to have on your playlist while you're running?
Well, what's so funny is actually I listen to podcasts. But I do have, so let's see.
You're not the only one that said that's kind of what keeps them motivated. I think it's awesome.
Well, because for me, if I'm listening to music, it does help my pace though. And I have noticed that, but with a podcast, cause I've done a lot of half marathons and longer race. Well, half marathons, that's the longest distance I'll do. But when you're running that many miles, you need something to engage your brain. So you're thinking about what's being said. So I really appreciate podcasts, but I'm a huge country music fan. And so I have been switching between podcasts and my country music playlist, just because, and not the slow songs, but like the fun, fast songs that just get me going. And Miranda Lambert's a really good one. Ashley McBride has this song called, I think it's Fat, You Got Fat, I Got Famous or something like that. And it's just, I love it. It's such a fun song. And then there's another one by Ray Lynn and it's You Can't Keep Up. And that's a really fun one. So I don't necessarily have a song, but if I'm not in the mood to like engage my brain with a podcast, then I'll put it on my fun country playlist and just go for it.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. And it's very different than some of the other ladies I've had on, and they're like, yeah, I like to like, you know, jam it out at this, and it's like hip hop or some crazy, you know, heavy metal. Like, so it's fun to hear like something completely different. So at this very end of this, the last thing I always ask is if there's anything on your heart that you want to share with listeners. And I feel like you probably do have something.
Well, and I, you know, in sharing this story and remembering back, it's like I said, I will never not share my story. You know, no matter what situation you find yourself, there is always hope. And if you feel lonely, reach out to somebody who you love and just know that there's always hope. If you're in an abusive situation, understand that you can get out. Honestly, reach out to me. And I'll connect you with resources because there's so many resources. And if you have a friend, like I said before, if you have a friend who is in a situation and you just want to scream, get out, don't scream that at them. Understand that where they're at is in a place and they don't understand the gravity of the situation. They likely don't understand the gravity of the situation that they're in. And so just, you know, God is real. And if you pray, like, there's so many stories of people who have never been into church a day in their life, but they cried out to God and he absolutely showed up, and he will show up and he will show you how to get out of a scary situation. So there's always hope. And no matter what, you know, you can definitely get out of situations that are unhealthy and scary. And please, please, please do get out of situations that are just so scary.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And again, if they wanted to connect with you for any reason, where's the best way for them to reach out to you directly?
Definitely. I'm always on Instagram. So the Lori Honeycutt Trades of Hope page is very accessible. My Charbel4 on Instagram. And then my email is lh28832@hotmail.com. So it's my initials of my name. And then it's a throw over from App State days, because we had numbers after our names. So that was my App State email.
Oh my
address.
Gosh. That's Well, I have my It's Sealed. I've had it for, I don't even know how long, over a decade. Yeah. Same thing.
It just works. You just go with it.
That's it. If it works, stick with it. Yes. Thank you for sharing this story and the hope and providing a way for people, you know, some just information that can help somebody else.
Well, thank you so much for letting me share the story, and thank you for all that you do. So you're such a light, and I'm so thankful that we've connected.
Me too. I feel the same way. So thank you for being on, Lori. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Have a good afternoon.
You too. Hi, my name is Seal, and I'm your host for the SweatNet Be Amazing podcast, where we share stories of amazing women who live in our community.